Hey, everybody, I'm Dennis Prager. As you see, I have a guest. I'll introduce him in a moment. And, of course, Otto is here. Otto gets more fan mail than I do, and I want you to know I can handle it. But it, nevertheless, is a humbling thing. Anyway, it is great to be with you. This is my home, and we are together virtually every week of the year. I don't know if we missed it a week in the last year. So it's a very serious thing for me. A lot of you watch. That means a lot to me. What it is completely spontaneous, my offering some thoughts to you and then taking your questions. And that way you get to know me and I get to know you in a certain sense through the questions. And welcome to the Fireside Chat. So this one is, I'm going to be reading to you a little bit. I never do, but in this case you'll understand why. This episode of Fireside Chat is sponsored by Colorado Christian University, which CCU Online has partnered with PragerU to offer adults the opportunity to pursue an accredited degree taught with conservative and religious values. CCU Online offers more than 80 academic programs designed specifically for adult learners. Most classes at CCU Online are only 5 weeks long, so you can take one class at a time and still have time for life. All courses incorporate a God-centered Christian worldview that has been a cornerstone of the university for more than a century. So whether you need to finish your bachelor's degree or start your master's or doctorate, you should consider attending CCU Online. Go to PragerU.com/CCU, that's PragerU.com/CCU, and fill out the form to receive more information. You will get connected with an enrollment counselor who can put together a degree plan that fits your schedule. So, on rare occasions do I have a guest, because I really do like to have this time alone with you. But that means if I have a guest, that he or she is quite special. I realize, I want to just tell you what goes on in my mind. I was going to say special, and then I realized, yeah, but isn't everybody special? So I had this great dilemma, you know, you're all special. It's like in The Life of Brian with Monty Python. We are all individuals, you know, 1,000 people in a mob. So I hear these arguments in my brain all the time, which is fine. It's one of the reasons I'm effective. I hear what one might think when one hears something. Anyway, he's quite special, and that's the case. That's why he's here. And he's Derek Green. Derek Green is the new head of donor relations, which is a very big deal, obviously, since we need funding in order to be as effective as we are. And we're pretty effective. Not as effective as I would like, because I would like to touch every human being living, to be perfectly honest. I mean that utterly sincerely, but I live on Earth and I understand the limitations. So within those limitations, we're I think, pretty effective. Derek Green, I am thrilled to have you in my home and on the Fireside Chat. You, I want just to tell everybody, you gave a video for us.
I did.
What is the name of the video?
Who are the racist liberals or conservatives?
Is that the name of it, or is it who is the real racist?
Yeah.
What is it?
Who are
you? Don't even know the name of your own video.
Well, it was renamed to.
Okay. You're forgiven. It's okay. I don't know the name of any of my videos. Okay. It's quite all right. But that's a very powerful video. How many millions of views do you know that?
I think the most recent one is over 1.5 million.
Yeah.
So far, yes.
So how many have you given for us?
I've given one.
Right.
Originally, about 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, I see, and it was redone.
It was redone.
Well, that means 1.5 million plus the millions before.
That's right.
So it's very widely viewed.
Yes.
Look, you know, we're bathing in the rhetoric of the country is racist, the president is racist. Right. So let me ask you, well, I want to go back in your own life.
Okay.
Was there a time, and you know you could be totally level with me.
Okay.
Was there a time when you thought the average white guy was a racist?
Yes, but I was really, really young. I was probably in elementary school. I was in class, and I felt that the teacher was, you know, paying more attention to me than she should have otherwise been. And so I came home and I screamed to my parents, she just doesn't like me because I'm black.
Wait a minute. You said she paid more attention to you.
Yes.
You mean in a disciplinary way?
Very much so.
Oh, I see. Oh, not more attention, called on me more. Okay.
Well, that too, but she was discipline and calling on me more. So I just felt that she was.
Okay, so you told your parents, what grade were you in?
Fourth grade.
You told your parents, what did they say?
And they said, no, she has a problem with you because you won't sit still in your seat and shut up. So, you know, that was my...
You know, I am cracking up. I never met your parents. I love them. No, it's not that you're black. It's that you're a nuisance.
That's exactly right.
And that is exactly right. That's the whole point.
Yes.
Do you know... So I always tell this story, Derek. You will love this. My grandfather... May he rest in peace. I love my grandfather, my mother's father. Mm-hmm. And he came from Austria in the beginning of the 20th century, came to the U.S. And he's a Jew. The whole family's Jewish. Mm-hmm. And Austria was the hotbed of anti-Semitism. Hitler was Austrian. Mm-hmm. Many people don't know that. And he learned his anti-Semitism in Vienna. Mm-hmm. So my grandfather came to America from a society drenched in anti-Semitism.
Right.
He didn't realize, obviously, that America wasn't Austria. So we would drive in the car. My grandfather would be, let's say, cut off by a rude driver.
Right.
And my grandfather would go, anti-Semite. And I remember thinking, I was like 8, 9 years old, and I would go, how did my grandfather know that this guy, A, knows my grandfather's a Jew, B, cut him off because he's a Jew, C, he's really an anti-Semite? It just might be, maybe he's rude.
Right.
Your parents were saying to you, maybe it has nothing to do with your being black.
That's exactly what they were saying. That's exactly what they were saying. And they even gave me a compliment, which I didn't perceive as a compliment, is that you're just so rambunctious in class that the teacher has to give you more work to settle you down. You fly through your work. And I was like, nah, it's because I'm black. Now, mind you, my parents didn't take that as an answer because they both grew up in the Jim Crow South. So they had a very real understanding of what actual racism looked like and sounded like. And this didn't fit the bill.
So did they knock it out of you?
Well, my father tried. He tried because, again, I just needed the discipline. But, you know...
Knock out of you the notion that I'm black and they hate me, or they're black and they're picking on me. That's what I meant.
Yeah. Well, yes, they did. But, again, sometimes, like your grandfather, old habits die hard. And so sometimes there would be comments around the house that would be to the, you know, extent, well, it's because we're black that they're treating us this way. So on one hand, it would be those kind of comments. But the other hand, it would be, listen, you have to work twice as hard as, you know, your white peers because they don't think that you're capable enough, you know, like them to succeed. And which is really interesting is she was right then, but technically, she's still right now because with the onslaught of affirmative action, people still don't think that we're capable enough. So you still have to try twice as hard to be successful.
This I've never understood. I'm a very big believer in dignity. Mm. I'm like crazed about preserving people's dignity. If I were a member of a group for whom rules were lowered, standards were lowered, mm-hmm. I would be so hurt and insulted. That is the ultimate insult.
It is. But to me, what's more insulting is that being part of that group justifying the lower standards that are given to you.
And why do you think that is done? Since it is so obvious that it's demeaning, why would any black say it's a great thing?
There's personal gain. There's personal and group gain from being facilitated into positions and places that that many blacks feel that they would not otherwise get, they would not otherwise experience. So the lower standards is a justification in getting that. And, you know, some people will argue it's a warped sense of black power.
And why do you think whites and why do white liberals and leftists support it, in your view?
Well, one, it makes them feel good about themselves and not being racist,
and I think that's what
wins out more than anything else. And they can go and brag about what they do to help black people and things of that nature. So. So
is that what you believe animates a white professor getting up and going and saying to his class or her class, you know, all whites are racist, and there are only two types of whites, those who acknowledge they're racist and those who don't acknowledge that they're racist. How do you see that white? How do you explain that?
It's very difficult. I don't know how to explain it. I think it's one of those things where I think it was Shelby Still talks about this idea of disassociation. They go out and say those things because they want to dissociate themselves personally from the sin and stigma of racism. I don't know how that's beneficial to anybody other than the person trying to cleanse themselves of what they see as an original sin, because it doesn't take black development into consideration whatsoever. It's like saying because whites are racist, or until whites are not racist, or until whites, unless whites acknowledge their racism, black people will never get ahead, as if blacks have never transcended white racism in the past. There are a number of examples in which blacks have encountered racism, but did not let that stop their pursuit of excellence.
Do you think the president is a racist?
I don't. He's led far too much of a public life, you know, for there to be actual examples.
My own view is that he couldn't care less.
Oh, I don't think
it registers on his scale. I think when he was a businessman, his thought was, can this guy make me money or not?
Absolutely.
I don't care what he is. That is my take on the guy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, here's an interesting thing. In the beginning, I was rather amazed by this because I'm very outspoken on this matter.
Mm-hmm.
I have a lot of black listeners to my radio show. And I know it because if the issue is specifically a black one, every caller is black.
Right.
So they had to get in through a lot of whites trying to get in. That means there were a lot of them. Okay. So every so often, it is not... rare, a black caller would say, you know, Dennis, you don't walk in our shoes. They're being respectful. They're not having contempt for me.
Mm-hmm.
But Dennis, you know, you don't walk in a black man's shoes. And so you don't know that how we encounter racism every day. So this is now something a lot of my friends know and people listen regularly. So what I remember the first time I did this, I said, wait, are you being literal or figurative that you encounter it every day? So he'll say, no, every day. So I say, okay, so I'm truly open to hearing tell me the racist experience you had today.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, Dennis, the day's not over yet, of course.
Of course,
okay,
yeah.
So fine, all right. So okay. No, I'm not laughing. I'm totally serious and respectful. So what happened yesterday? Well, all right, not yesterday. Okay, so listen, I'm not trying to trap you. What about the day before? And I never get a response.
Right.
And if there is a response, how do you know it was racist? The clerk was rude.
Mm-hmm.
What, they're only rude to, you really believe they're only rude to blacks?
Right, right.
We don't get rude people, we whites? I mean, so why would one want to believe? It's so depressing to think you live in a society that hates you. Why would one choose to believe that?
Whew. $1,000 question. It's very difficult. And I don't know, I guess at the end of the day, it is choice. At the end of the day, people who believe that choose to believe that. However, I think that it's a type of mindset that's been reinforced over multiple generations, whether it's been, you know, intended or unintended. It's just a mindset to think that we live in a country, you know, the former president said that racism is in our DNA, which means it's systemic, which means we cannot root it out, or it's very difficult to root it out. And so you have people growing up with this kind of mindset, and it's reinforced not only at home. Sadly, it's starting to be reinforced in houses of worship, and it's reinforced on colleges and universities. So everywhere they go, they're getting this type of mentality is being reinforced over and over and over again. So after a while, it doesn't become second nature, it becomes first nature. That's just the way that they think. And it's really difficult to get rid of that boogeyman once you've built him up to the size in which, you know, many blacks have built the racial boogeyman.
When kids at a especially a prestigious, expensive college,
speak
about being oppressed. I mean, most people, not only most people, you know, some guy in Ghana or Cameroon, you know, or Kenya is saying, you're oppressed at Yale. I would give my left arm to have your opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's distressing. And you're right. I heard you just mention, you know, it's worse there.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah. It is worse there.
Yeah.
I bet that a black student at Idaho State is a happier human being than a black student at Yale.
I would agree.
It's almost if you're in an elite place, you get a particularly sophisticated version of things are bad for you.
Yes. Yes.
I'd say another thing, like black dorms. So this is a totally open question. I have a theory of my own, but I want to hear yours. Why would a black want to be in a black dorm?
I think what a lot of people don't discuss when we talk about issues of like this is that I think that there's a feeling in many blacks' minds of being racially inferior to white people or to Asian people. So I think they feel more comfortable around people who look like them or supposedly share the same kind of culture. I mean, there is some shared culture, right? There are some common experiences. However, I don't think that those things are racialized common experiences, if that makes sense.
No, I think you're probably right. I mean, we can't know, we're not in their minds, but I remember when I was at Columbia, there was a Jewish dorm. And I remember thinking, I'm very Jewish, I'm a religious Jew.
Mm-hmm.
I went to yeshiva, Jewish school, my whole life. Why is Otto leaving? Is that a bad sign? You know, maybe Otto has some anti-Semitic, talking about Jews. He gets up and leaves. He didn't get up when you spoke.
He didn't.
No.
He didn't. He's definitely not an anti-black racist.
Clearly.
Good boy, Otto.
So I remember thinking, and one of my closest friends lived in one, mm-hmm. and I thought, that's the last place I want to stay. Not because I'm not comfortable with Jews, but I want to be comfortable with everybody else.
Right.
We're a tiny percent of the population. I don't want to hang out with 3% of the population.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I want to hang out with 97% of the population.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right.
And I know that's how you feel. I have no
mm-hmm.
doubt.
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that the healthier choice?
I would think so. I mean, when I was graduating or in high school and I was about to graduate and I was submitting college applications, I submitted a couple of college applications to the HBCUs, the Historically Black Colleges and Universities. And when I submitted the applications, I actually sat back and thought and I said, you know, I don't know if I want to go to an all-black school because I'm never going to live around just black people. You know, that wasn't my upbringing. That wasn't what I wanted.
You.
It doesn't.
And it doesn't.
So,
it doesn't. I hate
nothing
to use
against
the term,
HBCUs, obviously, but
I'm sorry.
I said nothing against the HBCUs, and that's what they.
No, I know that. No. And nothing, as I said, nothing
yeah.
against the kids who live in the Jewish dorm.
Right.
But I wanted to feel comfortable with my fellow American of every background. That was a goal. Maybe because I really bought the idea of the melting pot, and that the left has totally rejected. We're not a melting pot. We're a quilt, right? That was that Jesse Jackson's famous thing. We're a quilt of many colors and so on. But you could be in a melting pot and still retain whatever you wish of your culture.
Sure.
I mean, I still practice Jewish holidays. Mm-hmm. I mean, I sent my kids to a Jewish school because I wanted them to get religious learning. Like I think a Christian sends a kid to a Christian school. I think it's a healthy thing to do.
Right.
But it's not racial. That's the point.
Right.
It's religious. So it's a different.
It's a different thing.
Yes, yeah, it is.
It's a different thing.
So what about my theory that happy blacks, happy women, happy Hispanics, happy Jews, happy women vote Republican?
That has been my experience. That has been my experience.
Really?
Yeah, oh, no question about it. No question about it. You can tell by the disposition. They're not angry. There's no
right.
There's no created. What's the word I'm looking for?
Angst.
Exactly. They're either, and most of the times they're not even Republican. They're just conservative.
That's right.
That's been my experience.
Right.
But I understand. I take your
point. I don't care about the party.
Sure.
Right. Yes.
Yep.
The conservative.
Yes.
Exactly.
And every person that I've met, whether I'm speaking in churches or anywhere else, and the anger just it's unreal.
Right. If you're not angry in any of those groups, then you're not on the left.
That's right.
I mean, it's definitional.
That's right.
That's why I never thought of it. I've been doing a happiness hour since 1999, the second hour of my Friday show. And I never thought of it ever as political, because it's not.
Right.
It's about happiness. But I realize it has tremendous political ramifications, because the happier people get, the less likely they are to be on the left.
That's exactly. The left has a vested interest in not only stoking that anger, but manipulating that anger.
Right.
To get people out to the polls. Ever since 2016, and this is where you saw it a lot, the Women's March, it was just anger and, you know, public cursing and just this.
Right.
Ever since then, and it's just anger, whether it's in the halls of Congress or there are rallies across different cities in the country, it's always anger. So if I'm looking at that, it's not a good selling point for me personally, and anybody who doesn't want to be consumed with anger or consumed with actual hate. Not stigmatized slanderous hate, but actual hate. They don't want any part of that.
So do you have many black friends?
Not anymore, unfortunately. And most of them unfriended me, whether it's on social media or in real life.
I didn't know how you would answer that question. Yeah. That's interesting. I'm sorry to hear that.
I'm sorry to have experienced it.
That is disturbing.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, I got so many calls from black conservatives about 5 years ago, or 10 maybe. I said on my show, send me your name if you're a black conservative. I would like to be a facilitator so that all of you around the country can at least have each other's email address.
Mm-hmm.
And I failed. I didn't do it. I know. I wish I had.
Mm-hmm.
Hundreds of people sent me their names, and I really sinned in not following up. I can't do everything, and I want to do everything.
Sure.
But I wish you could meet each other.
Mm-hmm.
And by the way, that's true. I spoke to 1,200 Jewish conservatives, 1,200, at a synagogue in L.A. A year ago. It's on YouTube. You folks would love it. And I have spoken thousands and thousands of times.
Mm-hmm.
I have never spoken to a more excited audience. They were literally jumping up and down because they had met all these other Jewish conservatives. Oh, I'm not alone.
Right.
I'm not alone.
Right.
I want you guys to meet each other, too.
Mm-hmm. I think it would be healthy. I would think, you know, I've been a conservative for about 20 years now. And when I first started making the move, I had a really good friend of mine. He's still a really good friend of mine. You know, warned me. He says, listen, the path that you're about to walk is a very lonely path.
Right.
Because you're stepping out and saying you want to be judged by your individuality, not by a collective, you know, group. And he was absolutely right. It was a lonely journey. I had black friends that all said that I don't know what it's like to be black anymore. I forgot that I'm black. Things like that. Other kind of disparaging, you know, names as well. And so it was a lonely path, but I knew that I was on the right path. Nowadays, it seems like there are a lot more visibly, more black conservatives that are visible.
Definitely.
Which is a very good thing.
Yes.
And the thing that I've noticed is that I think that there are more black conservatives than we even know, because they are just afraid to speak up because of what the left does in terms of marginalizing them.
When I conducted the the Santa Monica Symphony Orchestra at the Disney Concert Hall 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. I got letters from members of orchestras, mm-hmm. I mean, prominent orchestras around the country. Dear Dennis, please don't use my name. I've been in the so-and-so symphony orchestra for 30 years. No one knows I'm a conservative. Mm. They've been together with these people for 30 years and hidden that they're conservative.
That's impressive, actually. Think about what you have to do over the course of 30 years to hide what may be a central
right.
element of who you are as a
so
person.
So it isn't only a racial matter. It's even by profession.
Right.
I don't want to let anybody in my office know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is a very sad state. This is new in American history.
I agree with that. And they've, you know, the left talks about weaponizing things a lot. And this is what they've done, particularly over the last 4 to 5 years, is weaponize the idea of being a conservative, you know, overtly. We have, you know, congressmen releasing the names of donors.
That's
we have
right.
people doxing,
right.
releasing public information of people so they can go to their homes and invade their privacy and potentially to cause harm to them. That's where we're at now. So of course people who are conservative may not come out and overtly say so, but that's the great thing about, you know, voting in secret. We still have that at least.
So what brought you to PragerU?
You know, it's interesting. It was a tough decision, but it was a decision that I thought that I had to take. Primarily because I do a lot of complaining about the political situation in the country. And I do a lot of complaining because where I sit, it seems like the right doesn't do as much as the left does. They are always animated and enthusiastic to support whatever cause, mostly wrong, but they are enthusiastic about it, and we don't do enough on the right. And so when I was presented the opportunity to come and try to motivate people on our side, maybe not to come out and be overtly public about it, but to at least support a cause that we can fight for, ultimately America, but particularly for people who don't have the wherewithal to speak up, I wanted to do that. And so that's what I did. And like I said, it was a very difficult decision because where I was at, I was doing a moral good. We were going to college campuses and helping support the state of Israel. So it was a very difficult decision, but I thought it was a decision that I needed to make in favor of Prager University.
What group were you with?
The Maccabee Task Force Foundation.
With my dear friend. Yes.
Yes.
That's I didn't realize that's where you had been before.
Mm-hmm.
I'll tell you, Israel's a litmus test. If you hate Israel, it is so obvious there's something wrong with your moral compass. One of the most decent countries in the face of the earth, and decent in the midst of societies that wish to annihilate.
That's right. That's right.
That's not easy.
That's and what's interesting is that it's the society in the Middle East that generally is behind a lot of these so-called progressive positions, and yet these progressives on campuses
right.
are undermine them every chance they get.
When gays are pro-Palestinian and anti-Israel, mm-hmm. and I think, do you understand how gays are treated in Israel? And then they go, what is the word again? Intersectionality.
Mm-hmm.
Some nonsense
yes.
term. It's called gay wash. They actually,
yeah.
the left actually has a genius for terminology,
mm-hmm.
white privilege, gay wash.
Oh, they're very good at it, yes.
They're very good. Mm-hmm. It's a gift.
Yes.
I don't know why God gave them that gift. I mean, it's like, why did God make the mosquito? It's up there as a question that I want to ask God. Why did you give the left such a gift for language?
That's right.
Gay wash.
Yeah.
Yes, they're really good to gays in Israel, but we hate them anyway.
That's right. Yeah.
Well, why exactly would you do that? Isn't that a little sick?
You've already thought about that issue a lot more than most of the people in that situation.
They
don't think that far in advance.
So you came from the Maccabees.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, we're delighted to have you. What is our time frame here?
Delighted to be here.
So what should we do?
Do one question.
Do a question? So, you know, I take questions.
Yes.
This is my fun part. I really love the questions. Okay, so here,
You only have one now, so.
Yeah, one. You're right. Okay. Okay, so here's one. Ben in Minneapolis, 16 years old. Hi, Ben. Hi, Dennis Prager. I mean, that's he wrote that. I just recently watched the Candace Owens show with Michael Knowles, and they discussed the new SAT adversity score. Will this score be a mandatory part of the SAT? I agree with Candace when she says that race, ethnicity, etc. shouldn't matter for a standardized test. Well, I don't know what that means. Will it be a mandatory part of the SAT? I guess you could apply to it. You have an adversity, and then is that correct? They'll score you accordingly, according to, in other words, if you've really had a hard youth, you'll get a higher score. So here is my, when I just saw this right 2 minutes before we came together, mm-hmm. and it occurred to me, one great way to figure out the answers to questions in life is to apply the question to something else. So here's a question. Would you like your pilot, the pilot of your next plane, to have had an adversity score on his pilot exam? I'll let you think about it. Listen, you know, this guy had a very rough youth.
That's right.
It's true he doesn't fly a plane as well, but hey, that's because he had a very difficult, an alcoholic mother and a molesting father, and you know, I mean, that is serious, and it is, that's very serious stuff. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why would that apply to whether or not you can pilot a plane. It shouldn't apply. Why should it apply to whether or not you get a certain grade on an SAT score? And inevitably, all people are going to do then is focus on their adversity. It's that you will almost pickle.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Oh, you think you... It's like there's a Monty Python. Have you seen that?
I know
that Monty Python routine where they outdo one another? Oh, you think you had a difficult childhood? I grew up in a shoe. You grew up in a shoe? I grew up in an anthill. Yeah. That's what's going to happen.
Or you're just going to force a lot of the applicants to be very creative in their storytelling.
Right, which is called lying.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. So now you're forcing people to lie.
That's exactly right. This is another act. I have a motto. Everything the left touches, it poisons. Mm-hmm. And I don't know of an exception. Now it's the SAT exam. I didn't even know about this till the question. Anyway, Derek Green, you are you are quite special.
Well, thank you. I feel special.
We are really happy to have you at PragerU.
I'm happy to be here.
And don't forget, PragerU/CCU for information on those great courses at Colorado Christian that you could take online. And I think that's it. Is that correct? I want to thank those of you who make this broadcast possible. Want to thank my mom. I ought to do that one time like I won an Academy Award. I want to thank my mother. I do want to thank my mother. Next time I have a great story about my mother. I try to remind me to tell it. Anyway, I'm Dennis Prager. Derek Green, God bless you.
God bless you as well.
CCU exists to train leaders. We want to build the church. We want to engage the culture. But we want to help you prepare for your calling. Our adult and graduate studies programs give adult students the opportunity to earn their degree at their own pace, whether you're studying at home, the office, or somewhere in between. The possibilities for online education are now endless. However, many students who enroll in online programs don't finish. Why is that? Because they don't have the support team to help them get through the program. And that's part of the CCU difference. We do have that team to help you not only orient you to studying online, but also to help you finish the program, get your degree, and achieve your goals.